Power them up.
We'll call the Sussex County Council meeting of November 15th, 2011 to order. First thing will be the agenda. Mr. Baker.
Yes, morning. The only change I would suggest is under executive session. We do not need to hold that today.
Okay, so no executive session and no possible action of executive session. Entertain a motion to approve the agenda as amended.
You got it.
Second, Mr. Wilson. Second, Mr. Cole. Any questions? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Next thing, approval of minutes. We had minutes in our packet from 11-8. Any questions, concerns, changes? Hearing none, they'll stand approved as presented.
So.
Correspondence, Mr. Moore.
Yes, Mr. President, there are two letters. The first is from the Office of the Governor. Dear Mr. LaCates, I'm writing to add my voice to those of your family and friends and congratulating you on being chosen as the 2011 Ambassador Award recipient by the Delaware Chapter of the National Association of Housing and Rehabilitation Officials. Throughout your 32-year public service career in Sussex County, you have exemplified the qualities of strong leadership and knowledge in promoting affordable and fair housing in the state. Since 1990, you have led the Sussex County Community Housing Office in the effort to preserve the county's housing stock and champion affordable housing to meet the needs of low to moderate income families. Your personal commitment of time and energy has enabled many families to receive access to affordable housing in Sussex County. I am delighted to join with others in honoring your effective leadership over the years and making a positive difference in the lives of many local families. Signed, Jack A. Markell, Governor. The next letter is from Sarah Wood. Thank you very much for supporting me on the mission trip this summer to Uganda, Africa. I started the summer at boot camp in Florida. There were 16 team members and four leaders. After training, we flew to England and then on to Uganda. Our project was to wash orphans' feet and give them socks and shoes. And we also played games, did crafts, and we got the opportunity to share in nearby churches and Sunday schools. And on weekdays, we helped build fences, walls, and roofs for the rescue units that we stayed. It's called the House of Justice and a rescue unit for surrounding villages to come and get help if they have malaria or other issues. I'm very excited to share with you that I'm planning another mission trip, but to China this summer. This project is teach English to children at school. Love, Sarah Wood.
Thank you. Anyone from council, any correspondence? Okay. Todd Lawson, county council member participation options.
Yes, good morning.
Morning, sir.
During last week's county council meeting, there was a discussion regarding member participation options when a particular council member could not be present during a meeting. During that discussion, we were asking the county attorney for options for that participation of a member, and Mr. Moore, I believe, over the week has come up with a conclusion. Mr. Moore?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Lawson. Under 29 Del Code 10006, video conferencing participation in open meetings, and it's under the FOIA chapter, and it does indicate that public bodies can have participation except for any public body in which the members are elected by the public to serve on the public body. So that specifically exempts this council, so video conferencing would not be permitted, and so someone would need to be physically present. And from reading the chapter, that would indicate to me not only votes, but also participation in discussion.
So they couldn't read the tape after a hearing and then vote on it?
If they were present.
If they were not present and Okay, I see.
With, I think it's been a policy in the past that on planning and zoning mm-hmm. issues, if someone is not present and if they opt to listen to the tape, they can right. listen to the tape. And then when they cast their vote, though, they're physically present. In this case, this is discussing would someone simultaneously at a meeting mm-hmm. be able to participate through video mm-hmm. conferencing? Mm-hmm. And I believe that this indicates no, you could not. Likewise, you could not cast a vote through video conferencing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir. Any questions?
I was wondering, since it is going to be, it is okay for, say, a council person to, if they're absent during a hearing, they could listen to the tape and then can vote on the issue later. How many council people have to be here for a hearing?
I believe it would be three. A quorum, and it'd have to,
has
be,
to be three.
However, okay. it also, there's been court decisions that indicate it, then the vote doesn't pass by a majority of those present, but it's a majority of the entire body,
always
which would
be three.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if you only had three members present and you
legal.
Only had three vote, or you had two votes, mm-hmm. that does not pass. It would fail. It would take three votes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Okay. Thank you.
More questions of Mr. Moore? Oops. Lawson, Public Service Commission Information Report.
Well, they,
I'm sorry. Mr. Wilson.
Mike, while we're on, talking about Vance being out, I don't know if you've talked
to go ahead. Go ahead.
But I did talk to Vance last night at 6 o'clock, about 6:30. And he had his first full day of therapy. He's standing on his feet, and he's feeling much better. He felt much stronger yesterday, and he did. I talked to him a couple days before that. So Vance, I'm having hopes that Vance will be back with us by the first of the year, really, so that this video conference won't be important to us. That's my comments.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Now then, Mr. Lawson.
Yes, thank you. A few weeks ago, during council meeting, Councilman Cole specifically brought up pending rate increase comments that he had received from constituents, and other members also chimed in regarding comments they've received from their constituents. As a result, Mr. Cole asked that we perhaps contact the Public Service Commission to see if they would be willing to come down to give us an overview of the process involving a rate increase. As a result, we have four members from the Public Service Commission present today, and we would ask that they come forward this morning and present to you and also address any questions that you may have. Gentlemen?
No, Mr. Bonar.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The illustrious David Bonar.
Yes, that's who he is.
Infamous.
President. Yes.
How are
yes.
you, ladies and gentlemen? How are you? Nice to see you. I'm David Bonar. I'm the Ombudsman for the Delaware Public Service Commission. A few weeks ago, Mr. Baker contacted us and asked that we come down and give you an informational presentation on what the process is with the Public Service Commission. We're tickled to death to be here today. We are able to answer process questions. From my viewpoint, I think both of you realize that, or all of you realize that I'm a member of the County Planning Commission up in Kent County. Also a city councilman in Dover, so I empathize with the phone calls and letters that you're getting in regard to this rate case. It's really good to be here with you. The PSC was established in 1949, and it was established by legislative fiat, and we have been operating now for these long years without major changes in the makeup. There are five members of the commission. They're all appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. They are salaried at $30,000 a year, with the exception of the chair, who serves as chair at the pleasure of the governor. The chair gets a salary of $35,000 a year. These five-year appointments are subject to reconfirmation by the Senate if the governor chooses to renominate them. Currently, we have four members that are sitting. Our chair, Arnetta McRae, retired at the end of October. And took a job in Washington with a national energy group. I have with me today Bill O'Brien, who is the executive director of the Public Service Commission, and his responsibility is the day-to-day operations of the commission and oversight of the staff of about, I think that we have 35 operating, or 35 authorized strength. And we have a budget of about $4.3 million to operate. The funding comes from utility companies that operate in the state of Delaware, which pay a millage on their gross incomes to operate the organization. Bill will go into detail about how we operate as a commission, what the process is for filing a rate case, and how it moves through the commission as far as individual contact is concerned. On my right is Kevin Nielsen. Kevin is the regulatory policy administrator for one of the regulatory policy administrators for the commission. He's part of staff, as am I. We act as advisors to the commission, as staff, and as investigators for the various complaints that take place on a daily basis. Kevin's specialty is in pipeline safety, which deals with engineering issues as regulated by the federal government, but he is also an expert in water and wastewater regulation that we have undertaken, wastewater in particular, that we've been forced to undertake in the last 5 years. So with that, I will turn it over to Bill O'Brien, and we will be available to answer questions from you or from members of the audience immediately after the presentation. It's good to see all of you.
Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dave. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Vincent and other council persons. As Dave said, I'm Bill O'Brien. I'm the director at the Public Service Commission. And we're really here to answer questions regarding our process and our jurisdiction over wastewater utilities. And so in that vein, please feel free to interrupt me at any time to ask a question if I start veering off into an area that you're not interested in. But I will start off briefly with a quick history of our jurisdiction over wastewater utilities. Prior to 2004, we did not have jurisdiction over their service territories or over their rates. As you probably know, DENREC granted what's called CPCNs to wastewater utilities in the state of Delaware until 2004. The law changed and the PSC took over that role. CPCN stands for Certificate of Public Necessity and Convenience. I've heard it referred to as franchise areas or service territories. But I bring that up because, in large part, my understanding is that the jurisdiction was transferred from DENREC to the PSC because of some issues that the county had with the Woods on Herring Creek, a development with a privately owned community wastewater system that had longstanding DENREC violations dating back to 1995, really. And then in 2004, when we got jurisdiction, the PSC took over trying to bring that system into compliance and to get appropriate rates set for those customers. And in fact, just recently, we settled cases from that dispute that made it into Superior Court, Chancery Court. And as a result, the state is now the proud owner of a lot and a half in the Woods on Herring Creek development, which we are currently trying to sell. But that was in part a settlement of the penalties that we had imposed on the Woods on Herring Creek wastewater provider down there. But anyway, so we sit here now with rate regulation and regulation over service territories. The reason we brought Kevin Nielsen down was because he has run our group that grants the CPCNs since we got that jurisdiction in 2004. So if you have any questions on the specifics of that, Kevin or I should be able to answer them. But anyway, as far as why we're here today, Tidewater Environmental Services, an affiliate of Tidewater Utilities, is now in at the commission for a rate increase for its wastewater systems for, I don't know what it is, 8 or 9 developments plus the city of Milton. Now, the way the commission operates is very much like a court when it comes to rate cases. Once the application is filed, the commission then issues a initiating order that sets up the docket, assigns a hearing examiner, which is much like an administrative law judge, to manage the case. And then the hearing examiner sets up a procedural schedule for the case. Now, that schedule includes, first, a time period by which interested parties can intervene as a party in the case. And my understanding is that the city of Milton plans on intervening in the TESI case, TESI being Tidewater Environmental Services. The public advocate has intervened in that case. The public advocate intervenes in every major case we have at the commission. And then the commission staff itself acts much like a party in the case. Technically, they're not a party. They're the staff of the commission. But as far as processing the case, we act very much like a party. Now, once that intervention period is over, the hearing examiner with the parties sets a procedural schedule that involves discovery, just like any case, where the parties will issue data responses to the or data requests to the other parties, and then those data responses are answered. And then there's a deadline for pre-filed testimony, where the witnesses for each party will write out their testimony, providing their position in the case. And their position in the case has to do, of course, with what the rates should be once the commission finishes the case and makes its decision. Now, those rates, of course, are based on the costs of the utility, meaning O&M costs, capital costs, and that those are the subject of the data requests. So over a matter of months and months, hundreds of data requests are served on the utility, and they have deadlines by which they answer those requests, and then the parties frame their positions and submit pre-filed testimony. Then the hearing occurs. There's an evidentiary hearing where the hearing examiner will take testimony from the witnesses from each party, and they normally will adopt their pre-filed testimony, and then they're subject to cross-examination from all the parties. Now, for the large cases, commission staff will also sponsor witnesses, either in-house witnesses. We have 8 or 10 analysts on our staff who will provide testimony regarding costs. And then we normally also get outside consultants on board to be witnesses in the case. These are experts on some of the more technical aspects of a case, like cost of capital, how much it should cost the utility to get debt, to get equity funding in order to support the infrastructure that's required for these services.
And you pay for those guys, the outside consultants, the PSC, or does the applicant pay for the outside
consultants? That's a good question. We pay them directly, but then we bill the utility.
Okay,
for
but
that.
You, but
we
you,
actually just got that authority a few years ago.
But you pick them out?
We select them. Yeah, okay. We issue an RFP. In fact, we have an RFP out right now for another case. But we issue an RFP, and usually it's the same cast of characters that bid on these RFPs. And then we select them. The commission approves the selection, and off they go with their data requests. But, yes, and then when they bill us, we pay the bill, but then we send it to the utilities to reimburse us.
And then the people that's using the utilities pay for it.
That's correct. Through
so
the millage.
It all goes back to the users.
That's the only revenue source out there.
But a lot of people don't understand that.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And then also, when you said experts, an expert is somebody who's more than 50 miles from home, by the way. But anyway, a businessman could do this job that's been in this business and utilities work. He knows probably much about as anybody you can get to do that. And probably that's, am I making sense of what I'm saying here? But I'm trying to talk, I understand, I'm trying to get you to read between the lines. But anyway, what I'm saying here is that you could have got what you call an expert. To me, an expert is someone that has done the job. In other words, he's a man that's been in business, and that should have been probably the guys that you're calling, I assume, right? Who are you calling? Who's these experts? What makes them experts is what I'm trying to say here.
It depends on what the area we have them for. If it's a cost of capital witness, then it's usually somebody with an economics and a finance degree, someone who's familiar with the models that create.
Were they ever in business? That's what I'm trying to say.
They're in business right now, believe me.
I can be an expert, tell you how to run something, but I've never done a job. I've never had the business myself to understand to really tell you how to do it.
Well, I think what you're getting at is more on the engineering side of it. And we do have engineers on staff, and certainly we rely on people who have been in the business of utility services to understanding the engineering and the reliability aspect. But as far as developing rates, that is more of an academic exercise in many instances. Certainly, there's an audit element to it, where you just go into the books and just scour their books and audit them for reasonable, to make sure that the costs that they are imposing on the customers are reasonable and were used for the utility service. We have analysts conduct those audits in the field at the utilities offices, and based on those audits, they then ask more questions. But certainly, point taken that the best expert is someone who is actually in the utility field.
What if something gets built during a period of, say, high-volume development and costs are high at that time, but now costs are much lower and that they want a rate increase? Is that, I'm sure that's factored in somehow. I can just picture a business person doing that. Now, a lot of our contracts come in now a lot lower, and so that's what's happening now. But I'm wondering, is that considered, is that factored in?
Yes, the timing of the costs when they are incurred is a very large consideration. We have, well, in any place, has what's called a test period or a test year where the utility comes in and says, we want to base our rates on our costs from June of 2010 to June of 2011. And that's the cost that you can go and audit. Then we're going to make changes based on actual costs as the case unfolds. Mm-hmm. But certainly if a system is being built during a high-cost area and rates are set later, mm-hmm. the commission will not allow them to reach back and recover costs from a earlier time period. That's called retroactive rate making, mm-hmm. and that's mm-hmm. it's against the law. So it has to be based on current costs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And a lot of this is very good to know. Now, before the Public Service Commission looked at rate increases and issues with the wastewater facilities, did DENREC look at those cases? Is that what you were saying?
DENREC had authority over the service territories, but not the rates. The rates back then were simply negotiated between the private wastewater company and the developer or the homeowners association that they were serving. And mm-hmm. generally, it was based on costs plus some percentage of margin or profit.
What did they do if they wanted to, if they didn't agree, if homeowners didn't agree with what's being charged?
My understanding was that would be a contract case or that would go to court.
Okay, all right.
But so, that was typically with the developer because when they get these negotiations, there's no homeowners at that point. So it's just the developer who owns the land who proposes something with the utility company. So the homeowners aren't typically involved in that mm-hmm. negotiating at that point. So it's
sometimes the homeowners associations are not on their feet and they're not organized until most of the properties are sold. So that's a precarious position to put them in. Okay. And you mentioned public advocate. I don't know who that it would be. Who would it be a public advocate for the people?
Well, currently, his name is Michael Sheehy. He was appointed earlier this year.
Okay.
For several years before that, it was Arthur Padmore.
Mm-hmm.
They have a 3 or 4 member staff in an office in Wilmington. They also utilize consultants on the cases mm-hmm. to do their own investigation, and they come in with their own position.
Is that who the people contact when they have a dispute over a rate increase? Do they contact PSC directly, or does the public advocate actually represent the people?
Yes, they uh-huh. represent all customers.
Okay, all of them.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Commercial, industrial, okay. residential. Okay. They focus on the residential because mm-hmm. they're the ones mostly without the voice.
Mm-hmm.
But when you say when there's a dispute over a rate increase, mm-hmm. there can't be a rate increase unless there's approval for it by the commission.
Mm-hmm.
So every rate increase comes through the commission and is processed mm-hmm. to one level or another. When I say to one level or another, the smaller the system, the less dispute there is over the increase. Perhaps the case doesn't take as long, and we may be able to do a hearing directly in front of the commission instead of sending it to a hearing examiner. But every rate increase comes to the commission.
I understand that.
But complaints about service or just complaints about a requested increase, that can go to the public advocate or it can go to the public service commission.
Okay.
And as far as TESI is concerned, many of the complaints we're receiving at public hearings in the evening that we're conducting. We conducted one last week in Milton. No, 2 weeks ago in Milton. No, I'm sorry. Last week in Milton and in Milford, and then this week in Millsboro. And the people come out. We transcribe with a court reporter their comments. And that all becomes part of the administrative record also, in addition to the written comments that we get, which, as you can imagine, has been very, very many in this case.
Did you ever find anybody in favor wanting to have a raise?
Excuse me?
Did you ever have anybody come be in favor of a raise? Besides the commission.
That's a very good question. It's no surprise that people don't want rate increases, but sometimes we get comments in support of the utility. There are times when some smaller association-run wastewater utilities have come in for rates, and staff has analyzed their books and have said, this isn't enough. You need to charge more or you're going to go under. So, you know, we look at it both ways. That's very rare. But certainly the utilities that don't have the profit motive sometimes come in and don't even ask for enough.
Mm-hmm. And do you have many private companies in other counties, wastewater facilities?
We do. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between the counties, though, that does mean that we get much less in Newcastle County, much, much less, because Newcastle County has an ordinance which states that their entire county is their service territory for their county sewer. Mm-hmm. So you have to go through some sort of a waiver process to get mm-hmm. in there, which is controlled very closely. Mm-hmm. Kent County, they have several private wastewater systems, but they generally limit development permits to their growth zone, which is roughly close to where their sewer system is. Mm-hmm. So we might have less there than certainly in Sussex County.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I have one more question. You said that this week there is a hearing in Millsboro?
Yes.
It's the last one, isn't it? That's
the last public comment hearing, correct.
The comment, and that is at the American Legion? Yes. Number 28, okay.
Tomorrow night.
Do you advertise those in the paper?
We do.
Notices in the paper?
Yes.
Okay, all right. And I guess I need to be clear on something. When people write to us or call us, who do we tell them to contact if they're having a complaint? He's really good, but I don't know if he's the right one.
Well, the way our public notices are, they ask for anyone who wants to comment on the rate increase or on service quality. We also consider service quality during a rate case. If they want to comment on any of those issues, they can submit comments to the case manager at the Public Service Commission, or they can come to a public comment session and offer those comments orally. The case manager for the Tessie case, I believe, is Heidi Wagner.
And that's in the notice itself.
That's in the notice.
Okay, fine.
And we take them by email or in hard copies.
That's helpful, yeah. You grant franchise areas then. Do they have to pay for it? Or is it free?
They pay for the application itself, but not for the
service territory. To have a franchise is free?
That's correct.
I would think it'd be worth something.
Well, when they resell it, it is worth something.
right.
What did you say?
Sometimes they will
flip them
to uh-huh. either another utility or to the county. And those are private negotiations, but I would think that those rights have value that are part of the negotiation.
Okay.
But under the state law, we grant CPCNs if their application contains certain components. It's a basically check the box, and under state law, if they've checked every single box, the commission shall grant that CPCN.
And it's worth money, then, is what you're saying. Could be flipped and sold, then.
That's my understanding.
As a commodity. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, thank you.
I'm not sure I understand this. Are you controlling competition between two utility companies? Is that what you're saying? You choose who you want to go in?
No.
Well, mm-mm. No, it's... The landowners themselves have to sign a petition. That's one of the components that comes in with the application for the CPCN. The landowners for that area need to sign a petition asking for that particular utility to be their wastewater provider. Uh-huh. And if they meet that requirement, then yes, they have it. Now, there is competition between the private wastewater utilities. If they both want a particular area, they may be in there at the same time asking for signatures from homeowners. And whoever gets to that threshold first, I suppose, would come to the commission for the CPCN. Now, I think there's some cooperation in the field between the wastewater utilities. And some of that must, I would imagine, involves who's already close to that particular service territory. And I know at times it becomes sort of a checkered map over who has it, and they will look at it and sometimes say, well, we'll flip this one for that one because it makes more sense. It'll cost less to serve those customers.
I was reading it.
That's interesting. You said Kent County will grant franchises to applicants, commercial applicants, if their facility, their proposed facility meets an actual need. Did you say that? Did I understand you to say that?
No.
No.
I've got a very limited understanding of how the levy court operates, but what I'm talking about are the permits for development, not the franchise areas, but permits for development. They exercise a certain amount of control over that, in that they will limit largely the development permits to their growth zone. And their growth zone happens to roughly line up, my understanding is, with their sewer system, with the wastewater system. So we have fewer applications in Kent County for private service territories, privately owned service territories.
So if somebody wanted to build an oversized, say, facility, a commercial facility, would that, how would that work into that? A facility that's more than's really needed or ever will be needed in the next 10 years.
And they want to build a wastewater system that's overbuilt?
Well, would that be a problem in Kent County? I'm just curious because we do it here.
Well, as far as getting rates, then yes, the wastewater company would have to be able to prove that what they put into the ground is used and useful. If they overbuilt it and it's not being used, then the commission will limit the cost recovery for that portion that's not being used.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Thank you.
She touched on it. It's the franchise, I think, is what seems to be every few years surface as an issue. And when was the last time franchise legislation was modified at all? Do you have any idea?
Well,
it's been a long time, I would think.
Well, it was 2004 when we initially got the franchise service territory jurisdictions. Yeah, I don't know if it's been tweaked since then.
There was some issue. I think Cordry got involved in it before he retired. But what I think is what people don't realize when they get in these franchises is that they last forever, and it's just goes on and on. And as she alluded to, there's no bidding process, there's no competition, and all these other things. So I guess for us to really see a change from the public's point of view, not so much county council, but the public here in Sussex County, it maybe would take changing some of these, revisiting the franchise legislation and tweaking it and making it more fair, because it doesn't seem that the public gets a fair shake, because as she alluded to, that there was a possibility that, that we were seeing these guys come in for land use changes and they were saying, we're going to take this territory, this, because all these developments are going to happen. None of it happened. So here we are, we've given all this away and these people are sitting there and they're victims sometimes of what they can do and what they can't do now with their water. That's, usually they could get private wells and do this or whatever. But anyway, they get kind of hand-strapped with what they can do. So I think the perception is that maybe the franchise area needs to be modified. Do you all internally have a problem with our current franchise legislation? Or is it something you guys...
Well, I'm trying to figure out how they're hamstrung. If I can certainly see if a homeowner signs a petition asking for a wastewater utility to be their service provider, and then that property flips, I don't know what the notice requirements on whether or not when you sell your property you need to notify a new owner of who owns the rights to the wastewater provision or the water provision. But I'm trying to figure out where you're talking about where they're hamstrung. I can certainly see if a permit is granted in 1 year and a developer isn't able to build for several years, and by the time they build, now the Sussex County has its system nearby.
We saw it around Ocean View. There was all these franchise areas that had been just given away years ago, and people had no idea because just there had been no activity. And all of a sudden, when this development thing started, all of a sudden people looked up and said, oh, my God, I'm in a franchise area. I'm just wondering, is there... Do you see any? Do you all have any concerns about the current legislation that, with this franchise, whether it be wastewater or central water?
We would answer any questions regarding. We normally don't try to take a position.
I understand.
Mr. Cole, I did speak with you briefly beforehand about the rules that we develop around the legislation.
Right.
And there was a time when, for the on the water side, staff supported putting a limit on the number of years that rights could be banked before they had to start over again.
Right.
That was not part of the statute, and in the end, the decision was made that could be overturned in a court if we tried to put a limit like that on it. That was not in the statute.
Right.
But certainly if something like that was in the statute, then subsequent homeowners, I suppose, would have a better chance of being able to select their wastewater provider if a previous homeowner had signed up for somebody and then sold the property to them and it hadn't been built out yet as far as the public sewer goes.
Well, maybe that's something we can, as we meet with our legislators and maybe discuss, you know, a conversation with them if they're getting any problems from the people. Because there is a perception that you guys approve every rate increase that comes in front of you. I mean, how many have you turned down?
That's what I heard.
Have you turned down any lately?
Can't think of one rate. I've been there for 15 years. I can't think of one rate request that we've granted.
What's that now?
No.
The rate increase?
No increases at all.
The request itself. That's the way you put it.
Oh, okay. Wait, I don't follow.
For instance, TESI is now in for a 90% rate increase.
Right.
If we grant a 90% rate increase, then that was a request that was granted. But if we grant a lower one based on their actual costs that they proved to us, then that's a lower increase than what they requested. But certainly, whenever they're in, we set just and reasonable rates. That's by jurisdiction. We have to. We can't just say, no, don't come in.
Right. I mean, have you ever looked at the books and said a rate increase is not justified?
Yes. In fact, just recently there was a development in Sussex County. The Ridings. The Ridings came in and they asked for an increase, and we said that the rate that the developer was already charging is a just and reasonable rate.
Okay.
Continue charging that. And that was actually...
Yeah, we only hear about the bad ones, and so that's the thing. We don't hear about the... These are what people have approached me with. I'm just throwing this out at you and just trying to feel... Get you to, you know, say something on record, hopefully that we can hear it on the radio tomorrow or read it in the paper tomorrow that you made a mistake and, you know, get some excitement out of this. But...
Well, if you want some excitement out of it, Sussex County
ordinance. It is
like
a topic that's not very exciting, but no, there is that perception, and just think. But I like hearing about the outside consultants, and I would like to see maybe possibly a bidding process on some of these things, because there is value to this stuff. Because I know when we had to go out to Bay Colony, and we had to buy a sewer system that failed, it cost us millions of dollars, which we had to pass on to people. And it always seems the public or the user gets the end of the raw deal at the end, and we did I thought a good job with what we were dealt with, but we're kind of strapped because we're only negotiating. It's not an even playing field to negotiate sometimes. So I just see there's probably issues out there. It's probably something we need to go to the legislature and have a conversation with some of those guys and see if there's some things we can improve on this whole thing. So, but I appreciate your coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted the general public, with all the emails we've been getting,
mm-hmm,
and letters,
mm-hmm,
that we really have no impact. Do we have any? Let me just ask you. Does the Sussex County Council have any impact on your rate increases, or request, or anything you do?
Well, we've certainly had cases where the Newcastle County has intervened as a party in certain cases,
okay,
involving service territories. The county can intervene as a party,
okay,
and then they have access to all the discovery that everybody else does. They can cross-examine witnesses.
Okay.
You can take a bigger role in the CPCN process.
Okay.
If you see a territory that you think you're going to get to in the foreseeable future, you can come in and object, saying that you're planning on serving that. And if you draw your service territory in a way that encompasses that, then there's a chance the commission would simply deny the CPCN for that wastewater utility.
And maybe a better way for the county to... Which county did you say basically declared their entire county a service area?
That was Newcastle County? Yes.
And then they can do waivers, which they have done. So once they created it all, they do have a process that then can dole out franchise areas, I guess, or something.
Do that.
Right. They will grant the waiver, and then that wastewater utility will come to the commission for a CPCN.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's another way to skin the cat, I guess. get us involved, because a lot of people think we should be. We do approve of these land use, and we did approve the creation of some large sewer district, or not the district, I guess. It was just Dave, help me now.
Projects we've approved that have private wastewater.
Mm-hmm. Right, but we didn't approve their wastewater service area. Right. We only approved the piece of ground where they were going to have the treatment, correct?
Yes.
And disposal or mm-hmm. sewer irrigation. Okay. Right. Okay. Yeah. So all those other issues were done at the state level right. or your level. Okay.
You said that the writings that the developer's request was just and reasonable. What for water service or what was?
Right. The when TESI took over the wastewater system from mm-hmm. the developer.
Right.
One thing I didn't mention: we only have jurisdiction for systems that have 50 or greater mm-hmm. customers.
Okay.
Normally, a developer will run the wastewater system in the early stages of the development, mm-hmm. and then at some point, they will turn it over to the private wastewater company that has the CPCN, and then that wastewater company comes into the commission to get an initial rate. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't the developer who came in. It's just that when TESI asked for its initial rate, which was higher than what the developer had been charging, commission staff looked at it, did its audit, and said, hey, as it turns out, the developer's rate is a better rate, the lower rate that the developer had been charging than what TESI is requesting. TESI agreed to charge that without litigating the dispute. And so the charge that the commission approved was the rate that the developer had been charging. So it was a lower rate than what TESI asked for.
I'm glad to hear that. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I got one last question.
Sure.
Okay. I was familiar with one of these things, but when a water company or wastewater company comes in and asks for an increase based on their needs, which would be improving the infrastructure, replacing this and upgrading and all this stuff, and then they get the increase, and actually some of the residents say, yeah, we concur, the infrastructure is old, it needs to be updated, we don't oppose the rate increase if they're going to do this stuff. Then if they don't do that stuff, what happens then?
That is another timing issue that was raised by Councilperson Deaver earlier, but the other side of it. When they come in, they can only ask for the expenses during that test period that they name. And then they can ask for additional ones into the future if they're known and measurable. Known and measurable. That means that generally they have to have started construction. They have to prove to the commission that it's going in. So the commission isn't going to approve expenses for something out into the future unless it is certain that it's going in. So I can't think of any examples where something was approved and then didn't go in later, because it's such a high bar to meet. Now, once they start building, if they didn't get it in the earlier rate case, then they'll just come right back in. By law, they can come in once every 12 months. And so many times they'll say, look, this new infrastructure is going in. If you don't allow us to start collecting rates for it now, we're just going to be in within the year. But the commission always says, look, if it's not known and measurable, you can't put it in the rates. We'll deal with your next rate case when it comes in.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it, Bill. It's been very educational.
Thank you. Any more questions from council?
David?
Mr. Baker.
Does the commission have an opinion about combining costs, like capital cost or operating cost, whatever, for a utility company, like, say, for wastewater? Or do they look at segregating cost out by development for, even though this, you may have one company that has 10 different systems throughout the state? How do they evaluate that?
That's an excellent question. The commission encourages wastewater utilities to develop uniform rates, but they need to have a sufficient number of customers before they can get there. And the reason why uniform rates are encouraged is because if there is a catastrophic failure in one development, and that development has separately calculated rates, then those customers are up a creek. when you have sufficient customer base to spread those costs across that entire customer base under uniform rates, then it works better. But we don't get to those uniform rates until there are a sufficient number of developments and sufficiently close costs to justify it. Because certainly you don't want one development subsidizing another development just for the sake of having uniform rates. There has to be enough of a customer base to justify it. And that is actually going to be an issue, I believe, in the Tessie case, because right now they have separate rates amongst developers, which makes sense because they came up one at a time, and you want to be able to match those costs with the rates for a particular development if you can.
Thank you.
Any more questions? Up to Mr. Bonar. Step right on up.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you very
Bill,
much.
Bill, thank you very much. Nice meeting you.
On behalf of the commissioners and staff, I want to say thank you for letting this come down today. For those of you who are members of the news media, there is a number that people can call to submit a complaint. It's 302-736-7500. The operator will then transfer whoever is calling to submit a complaint or a concern to either the case manager or one of us who investigates the complaints that come in. I think your whole discussion here today is important for you guys mm-hmm. as members of council.
Some letters. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Jim.
No, some letters I'm getting now. They don't leave an email address. They don't leave a phone number. So we're having to ask Ms. Robin here to send letters back, respond. It would
sure.
be a lot easier if people would. I guess they have cell phones because their numbers aren't in the book.
Yeah. So. And the commission staff will be more than happy to take complaints about service quality or
okay.
service issues or complaint issues. And in specific cases, the operator at the commission will transfer you to the case manager, who will then be able to take your complaints.
All right. Thank you.
It points out to me the whole issues that has arisen, particularly during the Tessie case, that you all were put in a very awkward position because you had no idea 30 years ago that development was going to explode like this. You have no idea that you'd have to expand your sewer system the way you should. Or where you needed to. There's no way you could have known that. And it's expensive. These people have the CPCN rights to an area, and you may be serving directly across the road, but that CPCN is for that territory, and even though you may be across the road, it makes it very difficult to be able to negotiate with them. Mr. Kroll, your comment about talking to your legislators, yes, that's true. We cannot, as an agency, change policy like that. That's up to the legislature, and it's up to the citizenry and the elected officials of the state to make that decision. Thank you again very much for having us down.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for coming. Thank you very much.
I wonder whose costs are lower, the counties or the private providers? Would anybody have those numbers? I'd like to
depends
know.
On
it costs $20,000 to put one privately for your house, so I'll give you a
ooh.
It depends on our sewer districts have a variety of costs, and the mm-hmm. average cost run from $300 up to a maximum of $1,100 in mm-hmm. the North Bethany area, and then I think the Tessie has, as I think was noted, has different costs for different developments. our newer projects are more an average home is around $800 typically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it depends how many front feet you have and whatnot, and the costs that we've incurred.
We're even exploring unit pricing and trying to bring in some uniformity to yeah. what we do here in the county because we've got rates all over the place.
And we're trying to make our operating maintenance costs uniform.
Right. So we're
and then we're
we understand mm-hmm. what you're all facing.
Yeah.
Well, do they save money by having a private provider instead of the county? I'm not hearing that whether they do or not. Is it more money? Does it cost more? Or is it just they petition the county?
It's variety, I think.
Okay, but overall,
my understanding is that one of the companies charges about $75 a month for wastewater,
mm-hmm.
and I think, and then another company has different rates for different developments that, you know, are all going to be across the board. Some are lower than ours, some are higher than ours.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So we can't really...
It's hard. I can't really give you a definite answer now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, think about going to wastewater.
Any more questions?
Nope.
Mr. Baker.
Yes.
Administrator's report.
Next, administrator's report. The first item is Advisory Committee on Aging. Attached is a copy of the agenda for November 21st, meeting of the Sussex County